Hello, everyone. My name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic.
Richard.
And my name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic.
Kyle.
And I just would like to start by reminding the group that when we first took on this commitment, we made a few promises to everybody. We promised that we would not motorboat through the text, but we would give it its due. And we wouldn't kind of rush to get to the 12th step. And it looks like in 12 weeks, we've managed to get to step 3. We're hoping that by next week, we'll cover step 4 and we'll round it out. And maybe that's not such a bad idea at all. Maybe the whole idea of I can't, he can, and why don't I let him is something that we should hope everyone would leave with, and then find that individual person that you want to work through and take these steps to the logical next step. Because after all, we're not here to do the steps with you. We're just here to express our opinion. We also said very clearly, right up front, that we were not the AA authoritative voice. That we were not here to tell you exactly how to do something. We're merely here to tell you how we did something. And we hope that our experiences have resonate with you in some way to help you have a conversation with another fellow AA or maybe with yourself about where you are at with your program. We promised some controversy. And I think we delivered. We delivered a lot of interesting controversy. And we exposed Bill. Oh, boy, we excruciatingly went through Bill's life and found out that he didn't just casually borrow from his wife's purse. He probably robbed that woman blind. And we also found out that, Bill probably, he may not have owned the house that he lost due to the mortgage failure, but he certainly didn't pay the rent and caused his brother-in-law to lose that house. So he was a pretty tough guy to get along with, and then we kind of moved on. But the most poignant part of the controversy that we created, I like to think, is when we got to We Agnostics. And like Laura, one of my favorite attendees here, always like to say, we did an excruciating review of We Agnostics. I mean, we spent 3 weeks just going over it, blah, 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 blah. What are some of the most controversial things that came out of We Agnostics for us? And what there was the question, the answer to the question of, what if there is no God? What if there is no God? Can you still get sober? And we came up with the answer is, yes, you can. You can. And we dared the group to do something. We dared the group to say, listen, every day wake up in the morning and don't pray, but say an affirmation. Make an ideal person, the person you'd like to become. And just wake up every morning and verbally say that to yourself. Please help me make me a better husband, make me a better worker, make me a better father, make me whatever. Even if you just think you're talking to yourself. You don't believe in God? That's okay. Give the verbal affirmation. Then we urge the group to wait 5 or 10 minutes and sit and listen for that quiet, still voice in your head that tells you what to do. Right? Now we know that all of us have two voices in the head. One's telling us, hey, you know, screw this, I'm out of here. In early sobriety, that's probably the loudest voice you hear. So we're going to urge the people who just got here, don't listen to that loud voice right away. But give it a little time. The person that's saying all the negative things, kind of put that aside and be still and just resonate and try to hear that inner voice that's telling you what to do. We gambled. We gambled with the group, and we said that we doubt if anyone can do that for 6 months in a row and not have some type of spiritual experience. Because I believe that just by doing that affirmation in the morning and at night and really waiting for that answer, you will start to change. And as you start to change, you will become a witness. And as you become a witness, it will be increasingly difficult for you to say, this is a whirling bunch of nothing that means nothing and goes nowhere. And you will begin to start that relationship. We talked about in We Agnostics about how if you just walked in the program, this is just about being willing. Just about being willing to kind of suspend some of the intellectual pride that you might have about how you think about God. We laid out a lot of years, 14 billion years since the Big Bang, and we condensed it down to 80 years of our life. And we thought of it, and we kind of suggested that it might be a little bit of intellectual arrogance to think that in 80 years, maybe half of those 80 years you spent in a coma, that you can actually emerge from that stupor and say one way or another that there is or is not a God. So we thought that that was an interesting and controversial thing, that you could think to yourself, who am I to say there is no God? Who am I to say there is no God? So we like to think we got people thinking about things like this. We want to leave you here with a discussion that you have with each other, with some talk about what the next thing is. But we also said, for the newcomer, it's just a willingness, right? Just a beginning to suspend some of my intellectual pride and maybe to kind of come to some kind of term or understanding. But we also said something to the old-timers, too. We said to the old-timers, it's like the call. You heard the call. Now what do you do? It's no longer about being willing. It's about understanding what the next right thing to do is and choosing not to do it. And we quoted Thomas Aquinas, and we said to Thomas Aquinas that I know the right thing to do is, and I don't do it. And I know the wrong thing to do is, and I do that. And we challenged the group to say, look, you're an old-timer now. Now, we came across a very controversial point in the We Agnostics that said, we became the intelligent spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. And if you have a long term in this program, and you don't understand that you're supposed to be an intelligent spearhead in the ever-advancing creation of God's universe, then you might be missing the point. We think that stopping just at the cessation of drinking wasn't quite enough. And we asked each of you to search your own soul and say, what do I have to do? What do I have to change to move myself to the next step? Because we identified that spiritual sickness as spending and all types of vices, right? But we have those. We just stop at drinking, and we don't think of any of the others. You know, sometimes maybe it's better that in our reflections we think of a thing and take a challenge on. This month I'm going to challenge myself to curb this bad behavior because I want to become an intelligent agent and the spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation. So for the old-timers, We Agnostics doesn't let you off the hook. Huh. And for the atheist, the down and out, I just don't believe in God people, you're still on the hook. You are still on the hook. Because we're asking you to do the affirmation. You know, personally, I do believe. But I'm not asking anybody to believe. We're not here to tell you what to believe or what not to believe. We're simply here to lay some tools at your feet and say, hey, does this work for you? Now, before we move on, I want to ask Kyle, do you want to talk about a little bit about We Agnostics and what we learned last week, Kyle? And I don't want to monopolize the conversation.
No. Heaven forbid. I heard at a big book meeting a little while ago that We Agnostics is the worst chapter to ever try and convince someone that there is a God. And that blew me away a little bit because I had an interesting experience with We Agnostics. You know, my sponsor is very fond of saying that he spent more time on that chapter with me than with any of the other people he took through the work. But this on this idea of just shattering our preconceived notions and obliterate, because, you know, I came in here, I was not doing well. So if knowing that my next drink means that I'm going to die, am I really so arrogant as to say one way or the other? It's agnostic means without knowledge. Are you willing to concede the point that you don't know fully one way or the other? That's what we're looking for here. If you're brand spanking new. I'm not looking for concrete beliefs. My conception of God has changed over time. I'm not asking you for a perfect picture. Again, if you're brand new, what we're looking for is willingness. That's it. Willingness. And I think we're going to hit the old-timers a little harder in a page or two. So I'll hold off on that for a second.
Oh, you old-timers are in trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Hope you're ready to do some inventory tonight.
Uh-oh.
But I don't have much to say. I think you covered it beautifully.
But I want to add one thing. For those of you who are still having trouble at this point of going through We Agnostics and still can't find yourself believing in God, we just asked you to add an O and believe in good. Because good is all you need to do. Aspire to be good. Think of what it is that you want to be, the perfect person that you want to be. Seldomly do people think axe murderer. You know, they think of things like the people that are caring and kind and giving to other people. We don't, well, in a society that basically sometimes worships material things, And sometimes we say, you know, there's an expression, whoever has the most toys at the end wins. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get lost. It's easy to forget. What really we want to be is just good. We said we are all, in the end, just walking each other home. So, with that said, we're now going to find out how it works, finally. How does this thing actually work? And I believe you have the first read, Kyle.
I do. We talked a little bit about whether or not we were going to read this, because you hear it in so many meetings, but it still bears mentioning. How does it actually work? Chapter 5, I wonder. Page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps.
Well, we talked a lot about the rarely. And we talked a lot about the first edition when Bill first delivered up the manuscript. Pretty much common knowledge that he said, never. Never have we seen anyone fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But we want to give the 1 in 100 AAs that come up and say, well, I did the steps and I did that and I relapsed and what happened? And we bring you to the word thoroughly. And we think to ourselves, well, you know, when I go, you know, to wash my hands before I eat dinner, I thoroughly wash them. But when a physician goes to wash his hands, well, he might scrub right up to the elbow, right? That's a different kind of washing, right? So thoroughly is not an absolute term. It's a relative term.
Subjective.
What is thoroughly for me could be not thoroughly for you. So we're not here to tell you whether you thoroughly did something or you thoroughly did not do something. We're saying you did it to the best of your ability. So once again, we kind of suspend judgment. What about people that are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves? What is that about? What is that whole sentence to me? That means, like, you know, if I'm honest with myself, if I'm really honest with myself, even for a minute, I know that the destruction and the havoc and the chaos that alcohol and drugs wreak in my life are never going to be, like, justify, you know, doing. It's just never going to happen if I'm honest about it. But if I lie to myself about the consequences, mental obsession, that this time it'll be different, then it's easy. This is why it's so hard to be honest. It's not saying that, you know, that you can't be honest with yourself and everything else, but everything except the way I drink and drug. Because if I'm honest with anybody about this, I know the thing they're going to say that I don't want to hear. And that's going to be, hey, you better stop. Hey, man, you're an addict. Hey, you're an alcoholic. You better stop. I ain't going to tell them that. Honesty and me as an alcoholic is like alien. I don't even know what that word means. Constitutionally, Inca? Yeah, maybe. But I think that might even be a little harsh. Like I said, even for a minute, if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. Some of the terms here are just absolutely crazy. Like back in the part of the We Agnostics where it says, you know, to go on blotting out the memory of the misery of the pain and suffering, or to accept a spiritual solution, these are not always easy propositions to handle. Why? That seems like a no-brainer because of this honesty thing. It's very hard for me to take an honest look at myself and see what I'm doing. Because what I'm doing is I'm destroying everything around me and I'm doing it to myself as well. But I can't even be honest enough to admit that. Now, here, and you might want to, you know, here it says, look, what about the mental disorders and the gravely emotional ill. Many of them do recover. So that means I can go to a meeting and people can have emotional problems. People can have mental illness. And we don't say, hey, you can't come in. No. We say, you can, if you can get honest with yourself, you can be helped. So I don't say, you know, oh, the doors are barred to AA if you have emotional problems or you're not enough of a drinker or whatever. I say, come on in. Have a cup of coffee. Tell us all about it. But get ready, because we're going to ask you to be honest and we're going to ask you to open up. Hopefully at this point of the game, right? We went through we agnostics. Hopefully at this point of the game, you're maybe willing to suspend the intellectual pride that you think about how much you know about everything. Amazing. You know, alcoholics come from 20 years of being drunk off their ass. 10 minutes into the program are turning shit like, well, I'll tell you about God. Jesus, what are you talking about God? You don't know. We don't know. But we have to get honest. Go ahead, Kyle. I'm sorry.
Thank you. That's okay. So one thing that I think we've done a pretty decent job at is trying to promote a non-judgmental stance about how it is not our place to judge you or the program that you work. Ultimately, the God of my understanding doesn't judge, and if every day is a chance where I'm presented with an opportunity to grow in God's image, then who the hell am I to judge you? Right? And I would like to call out in this first paragraph, speaking about those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, they are not at fault. The text is not judging these people here. Now, I was talking with a bunch of guys in my network about a guy who had 2 years when I got here, and he's put together 6 months at least once in the time I've been coming around. He's just in and out and in and out, but and they're over here judging him. He's not at fault. Who am I to say he's at fault? He seems naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Ours is a design for living. It's a program of action by which we live our lives, and it demands rigorous honesty. Who the hell am I to judge you if you're incapable of that? It's not my place. It is never my place. And on the subject of the grave emotional and mental disorders, I got to. It is my responsibility as one of those outright mental defectives to talk about this. I learned more about faith sitting in a hospital at 22 months sober, going back into IOP, than I think a decade working this program alone could have given me. If you do not believe in psychiatric medication, then spare me your arrogance before you kill someone. I will be so pleased to put you in your place after the meeting. Approach me, please, God. Because all I have to do to recover is be honest with my doctor, with my sponsor, with God, with my family, with people who judge me on an experience that they lack, and let them know where I'm at, humbly and honestly, and my crazy ass can still recover. That's a beautiful thing. There are no bars against this, except demanding rigorous honesty.
Now, we got to the point where, let's say, we said to everybody originally when we came in here, we were going to treat everybody like a bunch of newcomers, right? What would I say to a new person? So, okay, well, we're going to get honest about certain things, right? We're going to kind of really take a look at ourselves and kind of really review it. And then here, we get to the point where it goes, if you have decided you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. See, so the decision has to come. Right, we've already went through the doctor's opinion. We've talked about the physical allergy, the mental obsession, the need for moral psychology. We talked about the examples of the three types of alcoholics. By the way, every story in the big book, Bill's story, Jim's story, Fred's story, the guy who went to go see Dr. Carl Jung, all of those stories, you know, some people say, oh, the big book, it's so cryptic, it's so deep, hard to understand. But in a way, if you think about those stories, they all have the same moral. They all end up the same way. failure to enlarge spiritual experience, failure to accept spiritual help, need for some kind of psychological change. Oh my God, it's like beating you with a drum on this. Self-knowledge is not going to do it. You know, willpower is not going to cut it. It's got to be this spiritual experience. So again and again. Now hopefully at this point, if you're a new person, I'm saying, come on. You know right now you walked into the rooms and you're basically on the balls of your ass. And you need help. Now I've proven, we've talked about this ad infinitum. We know that we're going to need some kind of acceptance of this program. Are you ready at this point to do it? See, if that's not ready to go, if you're not willing to do this, then you know we got failure to launch. Houston, failure to launch. We can't go further. I'm still on the fence. I still don't know. I still am undecided. Hey, we have a problem. And that's why we get at some of these steps we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. Anybody thought they could find an easier, softer way before they came into the rooms? My life is riddled with easier, softer ways. And if you don't think you've tried an easier, softer way, look back on the examples of alcoholism and find out the guys who only drank on Friday, who only drank on the weekends, who thought they'd drink beer only, who came up with a whole different plan and how to figure out how to do this socially. Guess what? That's a softer way that you're trying to find. But we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. What were the old ideas that we were trying to hold on to? Well, they were the old notions of God, right? We talked about Bill W. and his intellectual pride. Here he is telling Ebby he knows all about God. The guy is drunk off his ass. He's looking over the kitchen table at Ebby, and he's saying, I'm going to tell you about God. My grandfather, the spheres are roaming, and they have the music, but I defy the preacher to tell me how they go, and how could there be a God with so much war and all this stuff? And it's like, Bill, you're on the balls of your ass. You don't know what's going on. Here's a guy offering you a solution, something you see right in front of your face, and already you're saying, hey, I got this. Why are we holding on to the ideas? Why do we hold on to these ideas, and why won't we let go absolutely? Because to let go absolutely means to all of a sudden be accountable. And nobody wants to be accountable for their actions. Everybody would like to blame everybody else for everything that's going wrong in their life. So what are the old ideas we're holding on to? Our old notions of God. How about... what are the ideas we're holding on to? The idea that, I got this. I can do this. I don't need that. How about that? How about my resistance to change? How about my intellectual pride? We talked about gap legs, right? Greed, anger, pride, lust, envy, gluttony, and sloth. And said that those seven deadly sins basically encompass everything that we do. Am I going to let pride stand in the way of me getting sober? Am I going to let my intellectual arrogance bar me from power greater than myself that could help me get sober? Many people do that. Many people just shut down at that point. But we didn't let you off the hook, did we? We put an O in God and made God good. So now all of a sudden, you're still challenged. You still need to move forward. Because if you're a new person, we want you to move forward. And to move forward, all you have to say is, hey, you're willing to do this? Are you ready to let go? Absolutely. You know, sometimes I don't sponsor people because I don't sense that willingness in them. I just don't get it. I have a trick question I use on them. I say to them, they say, sponsor me. And I say, show up at my house at 5 o'clock in the morning, bring 2 cups of coffee, and you better be smiling. And I mean it. And what I'm trying to get at is, how willing are you? How desperate are you? Are you really to go to any lengths? And you're going to be at my house at 5 in the morning. You're going to show up. Because that's when I got the time for you. Because I'm busy too. A few people came.
Go ahead. Not just an easier, softer way in active addiction. Did anyone in here have an easier, softer way in the rooms? My easier, softer way was my first 6 months clean. I thought steps were for other people. Not me. Certainly not me. Not that bad. I'm just a pants-pissing drunk who's spent more time in hospitals than out. You know, that's not somebody who needs a psychic change, right? And it's so funny because we call it easier, softer way, but I was dead inside. I accrued time. I didn't change or grow or heal. I had 6 months and people patted me on the shoulder and said, "You're doing great, kid," and all I wanted out of life was to die. That sounds like an easier, softer way to you. Some things must be gone through, not around. On the subject of these old ideas that we had, again, my mind immediately jumps to not just an act of addiction, but in sobriety. Am I going to be the kind of person that uses that word? I guess. The idea that I could do this without God, but fortunately, it brought me here. I'm an alcoholic, and to be alcoholic means that no human power will relieve my alcoholism. I faced the point, 6-7 months clean, that jumping off place, where I had to let go of a lot of my old ideas, where I finally became willing. You know, it talks about being fearless and thorough from the very, very start. I know a lot of newcomers who sound real willing, but I can hope that they're fearless and thorough, but I wasn't. Why should I demand of them what I absolutely wasn't? What I most certainly was not, right? I didn't abandon my old ideas. I didn't become fearless and thorough until after my fifth step. So I try not to demand too much of people who ask me to go through this, because it's a privilege to teach it.
So everyone heard now, get Kyle's number after the meeting, because if you get my number, you're in for a world of shit. Okay, that's all there is to it. Right, Kyle?
Yes.
So now, remember...
I'll find the time.
Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Why is alcohol cunning, baffling, and powerful? What is it about alcohol that's so cunning, baffling, and powerful? Well, we found out, right, that the main problem was that the alcoholic problem centers in the mind. So you're outfoxing your own mind. You're trying to outthink yourself. So that's why it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, because you are cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, for there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now! Exclamation point, now. Why now? Why not may you find him after you do your fifth step? Or may you find him at some point in your journey? Why now? Because right now, we're going to need somehow to do this work. Right now, we're at the point where it's like, hey, are you ready to do the third step? Right now. Not like down the road. I have to know where you sit on this God question and where you sit on this intellectual arrogance thing, whether you're really going to hold on to those ideas. So right now, we have to make a call. Half measures availed us nothing. Nothing. Imagine, I'm on a diet. I do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I eat whatever the hell I want. Doesn't work that way, right? Half measures availed us nothing, right? We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. What does that sound like? That sounds like the third step to me, right? We asked his protection and care with complete abandon, right? That's the third step. So really, before we even walk into this, you better have some kind of connection. You better have, you know, made your peace with that little excruciating trip through the we agnostics that we took the last time. So now we're going to go, and what are these steps that we took, Kyle?
That's a great question. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I always hone in on that word suggested, because once again, it is not my job to tell you what to do. I think people misconstrue that a lot, and hey, if it works for them, cool. It hasn't worked much for me. You know, you get these guys fresh out of halfway houses, and you're like, you're doing this, you're doing it now. And they're like, fuck, I'll be homeless again. I don't care. You know? So it's my job to teach you what I was taught. It's not my job to say, if you don't do this, we're never speaking again. Mm-hmm. Right? Because as a sponsor, I'm a teacher. And I tell, I was given very excellent advice. I had an excellent teacher. And he told me straight up, I'm going to tell you one thing and expect you to do it. If we successfully get through the work, I will expect you to do this with someone else. So now when I take people through the work, that's the only thing I tell them. Everything else, and there's a lot of it, is a suggestion. And if they leave it, hey, I hope that works for you. So here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And then many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it!" Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. So, something we have to talk about is this catchphrase you hear a lot, progress. Hey, progress, not perfection, is not a cop-out, right? I am so not perfect. So not perfect. But perfection is the goal. Right? We set a very, very high bar for ourselves. And progress is the key word there. And every single day, if I'm not progressing, I'm regressing. Every day, I grow closer to God or closer to a drink. That's it. And I'm not perfect. Sometimes I grow closer to a drink. You know that we were talking, right? You know that thing where you work a double shift and you get home, you do a perfunctory inventory and perfunctory prayer, and then you pass out. And then you wake up at 2 the next morning to do another double shift. And you get home and you hit your knees, you're like, "Thank you, God," and you collapse into bed, right? Yeah. I didn't inventory that day. I'm not perfect, right? I'm not. But I try my ass off at growing every single day. Progress, not perfection, is never a cop-out. I am probably fundamentally incapable of maintaining anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I would love, please, if you are in this room tonight, stand up and let me know that you're perfect. Because... I'll dump my old sponsor. I don't care. You know, I would love to meet the perfect recovered alcoholic. No. Please, no. I know you too well. So every single day is a gift where I'm presented with an opportunity to grow in God's image, right? And if you're not perfect, if you can look honestly within yourself and admit, "I ain't perfect," then how are you growing? How are you growing on a daily basis? We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And I'm sure Rich is going to have something to say.
Well, I know we don't want to get long of tooth with you guys. And we don't want to come out like the old ancient wise ones. We do kind of understand or acknowledge the fact that many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, I see this used as a kind of catch-22 loophole in the program, where people say, you know, "It's progress, not perfection. I didn't drink today. I went home and I spoke very poorly to my wife. I abused my children, and I acted like a total a-hole at work. But hey, it's progress, not perfection. You know, I'm getting better, you know." And that we find is something that we don't want to lean too heavy on that. We want to maybe take it more like the Nike phrase of "just do it." You know, like, what is it that you're doing? We challenged the group. We said, pick a thing out every month. Say, "This month I'm working on this." And this gets me to the point where I want to thank the group. I actually want to thank this group because they say teaching teaches twice, but doing some of this stuff has really kind of made me really re-examine and look at my own efforts at spirituality and what I'm trying to do. And as a result, now I now do my evening meditation and prayer as well. And I want to thank you guys for that, because that has opened up a new door for me. My wife and I, right? I'm very appreciative to the group, because you guys, somehow the energy of this room, and we, when we challenge you, we challenge ourselves. This is not about, hey, you guys, you know, no. This is, causes us to re-examine our own position. You know, when people speak, a lot of times, you know, you think you're speaking as a way to direct or express your ideas to other people in hopes that they might believe those ideas. But the other part of speaking is I am reaffirming my own beliefs. I am just merely restating and saying, this is what I believe. And this reinforces my belief by saying it over and over again. It's like a repetition. We talked about this today, and, you know, I do a lot of yoga. Right? And yoga, it means yoke, like the oxen wear yokes. And it's a discipline. And you just discipline yourself so that you do the yoga. Right? But unlike, like everything else, like a musician, right? If he wants to become a good musician, he yokes himself to the instrument. So the practice and practice, and you become a good musician, right? So what we're doing here is we're saying, if you want good sobriety, you must yoke yourself to the discipline. You must continue to practice the principles, because that's where the good sobriety is coming from. I don't want to come in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come in here to be miserable. I did not. I can't. It's just not going to work if I'm miserable. Well, how am I going to be happy, joyous, and free if I don't do anything? If I just stop at alcoholism, they say, right? They say, we felt that just the cessation of alcohol was not enough, and that we had to demonstrate this thing in our family and in our workplace and in our interactions with other people. So you have to be the change that you want to see in the world. How do you do that? You do that by yoking yourself to the discipline. And the discipline happens to be prayer and meditation. Whether it's an affirmation, whether it's an acknowledgement of a power greater than yourself, it's a deep kind of look at oneself and saying, how can I make myself the person that I was always meant to be? And those things are difficult if you have a lot of time. If you don't, if you're like, let's say you're a new person and we're just talking about this, we're not going to say that. We're going to say something to the effect of, are you willing to kind of suspend some old beliefs? Are you willing to take that look at yourself? Are you willing to do this personal inventory? Because that's what these 12 steps are alluding to, right? They're alluding to the fact that I'm going to have a fearless moral inventory. I'm going to search my soul. I'm going to try to make right all the things I've done wrong. And if you're the new person, I'm going to say to you, wow, that's what I really am hoping you'll do. Now, do I get to read this, Kyle?
You do. I know you want
okay.
to.
Okay, good. All right. Our description of the alcoholic. Well, where did we hear a description of the alcoholic? Bill's story was a good description about the alcoholic, right? More about alcoholism was a good description about the alcoholic. Even in We Agnostic, not How It Works.
There is a solution.
There is a solution. We saw some really good descriptions of alcoholics, right? So that's all over. That person, right? Our personal adventures before made clear three pertinent ideas: that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. This story has been repeated again and again and again through this book up until now. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, right? And once again, all the stories led to the example of, hey, guess what? At a certain point, it's not going to be about willpower. It's not going to be about my self-knowledge. It's going to be about this reliance on this power greater than myself. And that God could and would he was sought seems to be a kind of good summary of We Agnostics. So these are the three pertinent ideas. And being convinced that this, we're at step three, which is we decided to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Now, here's the deal with this for me. Everybody knows, common knowledge kind of, maybe you don't know it, but the original manuscript of this book said that if you were not convinced at this point of these three pertinent ideas, to either reread the thing from the beginning or throw the book away. They edited that Bill's comment out. But that's what the original manuscript read. So if I was working with a new person, right, and they didn't understand these three pertinent ideas at this point of the, at this juncture of the read, you know, we're working together, we're one-on-one, we're doing all this reading, and you don't understand these three things, boom. Well, hey, I have no problem. Let's go back to the doctor's opinion. Let's start this read over again. Because it's something I'd rather spend that time. Because all of this, right up to We Agnostics, almost half this book is dedicated to the proposition of understanding that I have a disease and that I need help. And if I don't get that at this point, this is not going to make any sense going forward. Why on God's good earth would I be willing to make a fearless moral inventory, confess my shortcomings, try to make amends and all this stuff if basically I don't even get this? So if you don't get it at this point, I like the original read. Either reread the book or throw it away. Because it's not working. It's not working. You want to say something?
I think in a perfect world, that would be the way it works. But again, given my somewhat non-traditional path through the 12 steps of holding on to my will up until my 6-step meditation, I'm really glad my sponsor decided to give me a chance anyway in taking me through the work instead of just kicking me out of his kitchen. Which he totally could have done, you know? He absolutely had that option. But instead, he decided to give me a chance. Maybe because helping an alcoholic is the best help we have. Maybe because he just really believes in being of service. I rather believe the latter.
And Kyle, I'd say that is a beautiful example to me of how that there's many different approaches to getting sober. It's not like a cookie cutter solution. You know, Pat stuck it out. I would have demanded a reread. But the bottom line is, right, that I believe that for every nut in Alcoholics Anonymous, there is a bolt. You just have to find the one that fits you. You know what I mean? Am I a perfect fit for everybody? No. Not many people can deal with the excruciatingness of my recovery. But Kyle is a different approach. I have one guy, I loved him. He was so sweet. Everybody loved him. We used to call him Sugar Plum. They never called me Sugar Plum. I don't know why. They had another name for me. It's the abbreviation of Richard, and I'll leave it right there. Okay? But so then it's wonderful that we're able to celebrate the diversity of our approaches to recovery, because we believe that the truth is one, but that the paths are many, and that it doesn't matter whether you agree with one way or another. We are all on our spiritual journeys. We are all finding our way. We are all just walking each other home. Right? So, who gets to read? Oh, you get to read this now, right, Colin? The first requirement?
I do.
All right.
Probably because the director. The first requirement is that we be convinced
<you. laughs>
that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So we promised you guys we would take you through this as if you were newcomers. And if you're a newcomer, this is the director paragraph. All I want you to identify with here is, remember, you're going to be honest, right? We agreed you're going to be honest, is that you're a control freak. And if you even stop to think about it for a hot second, you can see it. If we're doing this whole honesty thing, then don't tell me you can't see it. What I love about this paragraph each and every time I go through it is it talks about motives. the motives are huge, right? Because we all know what the road to hell is paved with. But to the people with time in the room, I know a lot of recovered alcoholics who are out there wheeling and dealing. They're at the forefront of God's ever-advancing creation. But I have occasionally heard some really troubling stuff about, like, I'm such a wreck right now. I got to work with a newcomer. I got to hear a fifth step. And that's selfish. And selfish, poor motives will always poison the fruit of your labors. Always. We know the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But if I approach being of service from an arrogant, self-centered place, it will poison my efforts. But again, I'm an asshole, and you can feel free to disagree with me. That's quite fine. The other thing that's cropped up quite a lot lately in my life, and this is why prayer and meditation is awesome. It is a huge part of who I am and what I do. But if you don't inventory, write your own book, man. Because out there, I was this mean, egotistical, selfish, dishonest tornado just ripping through life, right? But I found hugely at work that the way my director, my control freak is cropping up is I become self-sacrificing and falsely modest. And I'm kind as hell. I'll do anything for anybody. And, you know, and I start thinking to myself, ooh, I'm so humble, right? And the second you think that, you've lost it, right? You didn't even have it. But that's how it's about motivations. It's, am I being kind to this person in the hopes that they'll do what I want them to do? That's how it's biting me in the ass. And, you know, really, I didn't see it. When I was, a couple weeks ago, I worked like two insane amounts of hours, like 65 at the one job and then another 15, and then again the second week. And I didn't inventory for like 4 days the one week and then 5 days the second week. And I was a train wreck. And now I'm seeing it now. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm a control freak. But I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm still a control freak. And it's hitting me in new and exciting ways. Right? This is why I have to do what I have to do to stay right. Because it's not enough for me to hit my knees in the morning and say my prayers and then wake up. I wake up at 4 a.m. so I can get my prayer and meditation in. It's not enough. I got to review my day and take a damn close look at my motivations. I have to. Because kindly deeds born from selfishness are poison. So every time I come back to this paragraph, God, and it hit me. I often meditate in thinking about the day ahead, but I very rarely just set time aside to be open and let come what may. And I was off on Saturday, and I was presented with an opportunity to do that, to just sit and be still. And this hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, oh my God, what the hell is happening to me? Because it still crops up. I'm not perfect, right? But in this realization, I am presented with an opportunity to grow, right? I am presented to be of service, born from a place of love, not manipulation. And that's a cool thing. And it's going to suck, but that's okay. Because I just want to be a good person. And it's hard work. And I get a chance to do that. So that's what I love this paragraph. Did you want to continue reading? We are pressed for time.
I just wanted to say I'm so glad I got rid of all my control issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You totally can just ask my wife, right? I have no control issues at all. Totally open to the universe. I want to digress for a moment and say, you know, I'm 19 years sober, and no one ever bought me a balloon. So I brought this balloon tonight because I was very, very enamored. This wonderful lady, Kathy, come on, raise your hand, brought me a balloon. She's one of my favorites in the program, and I always tell her she's my favorite. She brought the balloon to seal the deal. I just didn't want the balloon to go meaningless. I wanted to attach some kind of meaning to it. So now we can go on, Kathy, and move on. Okay, so it's so easy for me to understand that I'm trying to control people when I'm being manipulative, pushy, bossy, arrogant, stuff like that. It's easy. easy to see. But what happens when I'm being nice and kind and considerate and loving and people are not doing what I want them to do? That really grinds my gears, kind of thing. I'm like, how dare you? Don't you see? I'm really going out of my way for you. And you're acting like this. It's amazing that people actually have their own free will and do other things than what I want them to do. When I was an alcoholic and an addict, I thought I was Truman. And this was the Truman Show. And that when I went to sleep, you guys all just went back to your regular jobs. And your whole universe, well, you were just there to amuse me. That's it. I know it sounds arrogant, but that's how I felt. So it's very hard to connect again with people and start to understand that people are not going to act the way you want them to act. This is not about, oh my God, I got sober and now everybody's treating me good. I have this all the time with people with 90 days in sobriety. I call it 90-day wonderism. I'm 90 days sober. I'm wondering why everyone isn't kissing my ass. It's like, what's going on? Don't they see how spiritual I've become? I'm now 90 days sober. Jesus, come on. 10 years out there, 90 days sober. Why is my wife still mad at me? Doesn't she get it? I'm spiritual now. And I always say to people like that, I say, listen, buddy, 10 miles in is 10 miles out. That's all there is to it. You know. I love this one. Why is my wife still needling me like that? I said, because she's pricking the balloon to see when it'll pop. Because she gives it a needle, and then boom! You start becoming this arrogant piece of crap again. And she said, hey, you see? That was bullshit, that spiritual nonsense of yours. You're really an asshole. That's who you are.
Oh,
and my kids do that to me. I'm 19 years sober. I got my daughter still waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know? Cause you know, whose fault is that? That's my fault. I'm the blame. I don't care about the time cop.
I don't care.
Hey,
let's go all
night. What usually happens, right? What usually happens when my wife doesn't do what I ask her to do? And after, by the way, I invented the pre-soak, if anyone wants to know, but that's an old other story. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself even more. He becomes, on the next occasion, even still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Look at how self-sacrificing Kyle has been. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, oh, I may have a slight thing to do with this, he is still sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even in trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of his world if only he manages well? Come on, if that sentence doesn't resonate with you, this is a problem. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can to get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Mm-hmm. In the book it says, when we admitted we're truly alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis. Then we had to face the proposition of God. Now this notion of, oh my God, am I doing this? Am I creating this drama in my life that's getting people all pissed off because I'm trying to control situations that basically I don't have any business in? And the answer, of course, is yes. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lulls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. That's the thing. If everyone else would just line up. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him. The alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are we not, most of us, concern with ourselves, our resentments, our self-pity. I am trapped in self. That is my problem. I am just so self-centered and so selfish that everything is about me. It's about how it relates to me. It's how I feel about things. And if only you would listen to me, everything would be fine. And of course, I'm going to get a big fat resentment because I am just a child. And I'm going to take just that one sentence, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems. And I believe that that is the root of my problem. That I identify recovery in people when they start to become empathetic towards other people. Like when people actually start giving a crap about someone else besides themselves. I hear it in newcomers. They explain stories about their friends. And in such detail, I know they're listening and they're attentive. They care. Empathy for another human being, from Guy walking from the Truman Show to this, is quite a leap. It's quite a leap. But that's some of the miracles of the program that make us change, right? We change. You know, this is why my friend always says, change is the constant, right? Intensity or velocity is the variable. So we all change over time. It's how fast do we change. And I do believe that there's a direct correlation to how we change, to how much we put the discipline, the yoga, the yoke of the program, how we put it into action in our day-to-day lives determines the velocity of that change. Some people are accepting a little bit of change. It's progress, not perfection after all, isn't it? I just want to stop drinking. I don't care about this. I like gambling. I like this. I like my vices. I like all of these things. But I don't connect the passions with my character defects and shortcomings because I'm not there yet. See, I'm still trying to control. Gord, you take it from there.
Come. Absolutely. Just real quick. On this idea of selfishness, what I want, right? I hear a lot in beginners meetings or men's meetings, people will say, "You're not special." Right? And you are special, all of you. You're a child of God. All of you are special. But that's a great metric for where someone is at in their program. Because if we're all special, then all of our wants matter equally. And when I'm capable of putting what you want ahead of what I want, that's change. That's progress. That's what I look for in newcomers. Selflessness, right? Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our own self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Some excellent advice I once heard was that to give to newcomers, there's two things you need to know about God, and that's it. There is one, and you ain't it. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, thank you for laughing, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Mm-hmm. Our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. The Kyle MacDonald story, right? Like, looking back, everything that's ever gone wrong in my life, like, I get that there are a lot of people who have been well and truly victimized by others. A couple of times, maybe, but by and large, the vast majority of things that have gone spectacularly wrong in my life was my own doing. oh my God, right? And how, oh, we talked about this during We Agnostics a little bit, but how often did I blame God for my scars, right? The arrogance, the refusal to accept my own part. Oh, but we're not there yet. We're not going to get there. Damn. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. There's that idea of being a control freak again, right? And ultimately, this idea of freedom, right? A new way of life. We need look no further for utopia. I don't care about an afterlife. This is heaven. This is the best my life has ever been. And if I keep doing the right thing, I can only handle it better, regardless of what happens. This God idea, this turning it over, is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Freedom from my old life, freedom from my sickness. That is a beautiful thing. We're shy for time, but did you want to talk about it? Did you want to power through?
Listen, just one thing, just one quick thing. The alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, although he usually doesn't think so. Why doesn't he think so? If you know, we've already gotten to this book, you're working with a new person, because we really haven't gotten to the steps yet. We're really just talking about going through this inventory. So at this point, if you're working with a new person, you'll probably hear things like, my wife is this, my boss is this, my kids are this, this happened to me, I've been a victim, because you usually don't think so. Because you haven't gotten honest with yourself yet. But we're going to go on that little journey of honesty, but that hasn't started yet, right? We're just kind of talking about it. When we sincerely took this position, that is the position of allowing God to help us, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work as well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and design, and more became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Once again, that empathy for another human being is starting to occur. As we felt a new power flow in, and the empathy might be just as simple as holding the door for somebody at first, but it's something. As we felt the new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. The thing is, right, the person that lives with one foot in the past and one foot in the future, the worries of yesterday and the worries of tomorrow, coupled with today's load, makes today's load impossible to bear. So once we let go and we are freed from this concern, this fear of what might happen, this concern about what happened, and we could actually live in the moment and be present with God and or that thing we like to refer to as the higher power. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Once again, back to that self-will run riot, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And now, this is a very provocative point in the program. If you're going to take step three, you have to sincerely mean this. You have to have really had some experience with the We Agnostics chapter. You might have stuck an O in good at a certain point, but at a certain point, you have to take something called the leap of faith. The intellectual understanding of the consciousness of God or the presence of God is great, but at a certain point, we all have to take a leap of faith because we understand that it's not something that's provable. It's not something mathematical. It's something that we feel in our hearts. So now we're at this point where we're going to have a profound change, and that profound change is going to help us to get out of self by developing empathy for other beings. Go, go.
Once again, just to reiterate what an arrogant ass I was when I got here. I did my six-step meditation, I said my seven-step prayer, and then I revisited this step because I never really did it the first time. I said the words, but it didn't mean anything. I had established no connection whatsoever with any sort of power right? And once I found that power within me, because that's where God resides, right? That's the road to God. Is you find him within, you have to feel it. I revisited this step. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. What a great description of sponsor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. This idea, there's this idea of honesty again, right? Because if you're new here, that's what we're looking for. And ultimately, I couldn't come to God until I was even just a smidgen humble, right? I had to destroy my arrogance. It crops up a lot, and I got to work on it. But this, it's mentioned a lot of times throughout this book, this idea of humbly, of humility ultimately is recognizing that I can't do this alone. And when you really, really accept that, you will find God if you go looking. Next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. We're out of time, dude. Can we reread that paragraph next week?
I got a minute.
Comment. Cool. Cool. So you hear a lot about people. I have heard a lot about people having this huge, remarkable third step experience, right? But it doesn't mean anything unless you then go on to this vigorous course of action, right? Because to trust and believe, I am constantly learning new stuff about our disease, but to be alcoholic means that talk is cheap. So you can say this, you can sell it to me, and I can believe it, but if then you don't immediately get down to, let's do this house cleaning, right? Then you haven't had that third step experience, because if you really had it, then you would be ready to do the work, and you would be willing to do the work, and you would do the work. Our liquor was but a symptom, because of course it was, because my disease resides in my heart, it resides in my soul, and we're getting to that next week. I'm going to talk about that next week. The liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions, the things that really kept me sick.
All right, thank you.
Okay.